We'll spend much of this first hour metaphorically in the waters of the Oregon coast, examining two creatures and two very different fates. First, the thriving creature, the European green crab. That first part of the name is a dead giveaway. It's not from around here. And it raises concerns, like any invasive species gaining a foothold in the region. Let's get a picture of green crabs and the situation with them. Two guests with us. Sean Schooler is the lead scientist at the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve in Charleston. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
Good to have you here. Kim Sims is with us as well, a PhD candidate who did her dissertation on green crabs. Welcome, Kim.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Kim, let's start with you. Where do the crabs come from? How'd they get here?
Well, they get here through human interactions, mostly from shipping ships going from port to port. Specifically for the green crab, it arrives as part of packing material that comes with bait, like live worms or seafood being shipped from around the world or even from the East Coast.
So is it small enough that it can't be detected when it's shipped in with those products?
What happens is when it's in a larval state, it can easily be attached to algae or seaweed that's used as packing material, and then people are disposing of that packing material improperly by releasing it into the waterways, and larvae can develop into large crabs.
Oh, is it just chucked overboard on ship or at the dock or something?
Again, it's usually by human means, so people may think, oh, this algae looks good, let's just throw it back into the water.
Okay, first mistake there. Sean Schooler, this is not, I imagine, the first foreign invader in the South Slough Estuary.
Oh, no, there's all sorts of things that come in on ballast, often in ships or by people. We've got everything from stuff in the water to stuff on the land, so lots of invasive species all around us.
And go ahead.
I was saying a lot of them aren't, so some do negative things to us in the environment, but a lot of them are just there and they don't increase to the point where they're a problem.
All right, but the green crab is definitely getting into that category?
Yes, and that's why we had this report out. We wanted to make sure that everyone knew that the green crab now is at levels where it's probably starting to negatively impact our environment.
So give us a sense of that environment. Let's back up a step and give us an overview, if you would, of the rich tapestry of life in the estuary there.
Yeah, well, we have all sorts of things in our estuaries. Lots of other crabs, of course. We've got fishery species. We have endangered fish species as well, crabs, other crabs, all sorts of things. And the green crab pretty much eats any of the stuff that it can. So it's one of those omnivores. It'll scuttle along the bottom and just try to eat whatever it can. It also is a predator, so it will eat native species, native crabs, if they're small enough. It'll eat our bivalves, our shellfish as well. So that's a voracious predator is one of the main problems of the green crab.
So pretty much all the estuary is a buffet to the green crab.
That's right.
So, Kim, give us an idea of how extensive they've gotten here. There's been trapping, I understand, for 20 years in the region. Talk about what the numbers look like.
Well, the numbers don't look very good because, as Dr. Schooler mentioned, the green crab is opportunistic. It eats everything, and we have sightings all along the coast, coming from San Francisco up to British Columbia.
All right, so all along the coast, not just in the estuary by a long shot. And what do the numbers look like specifically in the estuary?
We are getting to numbers where populations are becoming more established. The numbers are increasing each year.
Okay. And Dr. Schooler, what are we looking at here? I mean, how big a difference from, say, 20 years ago when you first started doing some trapping and testing?
Yeah, well, first I should say that Dr. Sylvia Yamada has started this project 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Kim and I have only been involved the past few years. But basically what we're finding is that they went from essentially zero. They came up on the currents from San Francisco Bay and into Coos Bay Estuary and all along the coast. And the past 5 years, since 2016, it's been increasing steadily. And so before that, it would come, they'd come and they'd leave, they'd come and they'd leave. And now they're increasing continuously. We're only getting, I mean, it'd say four crabs per trap, but it's that's misleading because some places of the estuary have a lot more. So we're getting 26, 30, even 40 crabs per trap. In some areas, like in Coos Bay near the waterfront, where there's lots of stuff under the water for them to hide in and probably food available for them. So some areas have a lot more, and that's very concerning.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I did look at the numbers in the report and noticed that, yeah, in some cases it was 4-point-something crabs per trap, which you can look at and go, well, that's not that many. But when you look at the overall picture, it's a different kind of thing.
Yep, that's correct. And that's the important part, is that they're going to have negative effects in these particular areas. We really need to get in there and do some research and figure out what's happening and how we can manage the green crab.
Green crab is indeed the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Sean Schuler is the lead scientist at the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve based in Charleston on the Oregon coast near Coos Bay. Kim Sims is a PhD student who did her dissertation on the green crabs. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we explore what's going on with the creature and what can be done about its presence there. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Sean, did I understand you to say that the crabs that are in the South Slough Estuary may have gotten there not by being dumped from ships, but just by moving up the coast?
That's correct. That's probably where we got our crab. So Kim was correct in that in San Francisco, they most likely came in through packing materials. But now they're coming up the coast in the currents. And so there's a strong northward current, especially in warmer years, like El Nino years, called the Davidson Current, that runs past San Francisco up to Coos Bay and above. And that's probably where they're coming in from, initially they were coming in from. And so they'd come up in this current, they'd come into Coos Bay, they'd live for a few years, and then the population would die out. But now it looks like we have self-reproduction in these estuaries, including our estuary and also ones up the coast. And so we've been looking at, Sylvia mostly has been looking at other estuaries along the coast too, and goes all the way up to Willapa. We know that each year the numbers are increasing. So it isn't just Coos Bay, it's all the estuaries along the coast that we should be worried about.
Does Coos Bay appear to have a greater number of them than some of the other places that Sylvia Yamada is looking at?
Yes, it does. It leads some of the highest numbers, certainly than other estuaries. But that's, again, hard to tell because it depends on where you're sampling in the estuary as well. So. Mm-hmm. But I would say that they're all in danger of damage from green crabs. And Kim's done some interesting work looking at the biotic resistance from the native crabs as well. And that's kind of what her thesis is really about.
So first of all, let's talk about the differences, Kim. Not necessarily green, it seems. I mean, they're called European green crabs, but what do they look like and how do you tell them apart from the other crabs?
That's a good point, Jeff. Thank you for making that. The green crabs is definitely a misnomer because they're not always green. Sometimes they're yellow, sometimes they're red, orangish, brown, or white. Sometimes they have mottling on them. So the best way to identify the green crab is with the 5 spines on either side of their eyes. So there's 5 spines on the left and 5 spines on the right that frames the eyes, and there's 3 rounded bumps in the middle of the eyes, and that's the best way to identify the green crab.
2 sets of 5 spines and 3 bumps, and then you got yourself a European green crab, no matter what the color is.
That is very correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
And then, so what are you finding about the green crab's displacement of native species? What are their interactions with the other crab species there?
As Dr. Schuler mentioned, they are very aggressive, and they will compete with native crabs of the same size. However, large native crabs, like a large red rock crab, which is also native to Oregon, can actually provide some biotic resistance against the green crab. So crabs are opportunistic predators. So a large crab will prey upon a small crab if it has the opportunity.
I understand that does work against the green crabs, is that they are somewhat smaller, for example, than Dungeness and red rock crabs.
Yes, that's correct. Green crabs can reach a size about 3 to 4 inches, so they don't make ideal candidates to compete for human consumption as we have for the Dungeness crab.
Simply because there's not a lot of meat on them, and a lot of cracking work, I understand, too.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So, Sean Schuler, where are they primarily clustering in the estuary? I understand it's not an even distribution water salinity and things like that.
Yes, probably 2 things. One, way up in the estuary, it's too much fresh water, And down lower, you have, as we talked about, the native larger crabs. So they kind of like it in between in the middle estuary area. It seems currently that we're getting the highest numbers in areas like around the Coos Bay waterfront, which is most likely because there's lots of material that's been kind of tossed in or thrown into that area, lots of places to hide, and probably also a fair amount of food that goes into that area. And so I expect that's why we have higher numbers in the Coos Bay waterfront area.
When you say stuff in the water, you mean like construction debris, things like that?
Yeah, like where we do our sampling, there's definitely lots of stuff that's left in. I mean, you can imagine there's all sorts of things, probably old boat hulls under there, and all sorts of stuff they can crawl into and get out of way of predation events, predators.
So it sounds like the green crab is a pretty good adapter to figure out the situations it's in and take advantage of situations that that more established species perhaps haven't done.
Yes, it's very good at getting into new places and baiting, and then doing well once it gets there. It's an omnivore; it can eat anything, and it can really move around quite a bit in those areas and find places to hide and live.
We were talking about European green crabs showing up more and more on the West Coast, specifically in this case in Coos Bay. We're talking to Sean Schuler, the lead scientist at the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve, and Kim Sims is a PhD student who has studied green crabs extensively and wrote her dissertation. Have you gotten your PhD already, Kim? I should be including that if it's happened.
Well, thank you for that. I recently just finished my master's degree. I'm not a PhD student. I did what is called a STEM project, which is similar to a thesis. So I just graduated from Oregon State University.
Okay, so just getting to work on the PhD?
Well, technically my degree is terminal at a master's, and I haven't decided if I wanted to pursue a PhD.
Okay. I didn't mean to advance things a little further than you had planned there. I'm sorry about that.
Anyway, no worries.
You can join the conversation here on the Jefferson Exchange with Kim and Sean at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Sean, aside from impacts on crabs, bivalves, some of the other animals you talked about, are there things that are beginning to look structurally different in the estuary because of the presence of the green crabs?
Yes. One of the big problems is they also disrupt our eelgrass beds. So eelgrass is a habitat in estuaries and along the coast, and it really is sort of a nursery for everything from Dungeness crabs to various fish species. It provides habitat for those, and green crabs, they'll eat the rhizomes, the roots, and also dig them up. So there's going to be more of a problem, I think, with that sort of, it changes the entire foundation, the entire structure of some of these estuary habitats.
What could end up happening? I mean, if you have less eelgrass, or if just the different balance of that, what happens to other creatures that depend upon it?
Well, that's a good question. And basically, a lot of them will disappear. The populations will be reduced, especially those that require eelgrass. There are some pipe fishes and things that really do just well in eelgrass beds. Other things will probably just be reduced in the numbers in the estuary.
In terms of the ways that crabs act with each other, Kim, we've talked a bit about the fact that the European green crabs are somewhat smaller, therefore can be taken advantage of by larger Dungeness or red rock crabs. But does it go the other way? I mean, if they are bigger than juveniles of the species, will they be the predators on those crabs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I believe Dr. Schuler recently did a study comparing that larger green crabs will prey on red rock crabs and Dungeness crabs.
Wow. Okay. So it's a bit of a, not to get too flip here, but it's a crab eat crab world out there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, very aggressive then, it sounds like, from what you're saying.
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. So, Sean, is the reserve trapping just to come up with counts, or is there any sort of catch and remove element to that?
Well, both, basically. So we are required, and everyone's required, if you pull out an invasive species, you can't put it back in the water. So you are required to dispose of any green crabs that you catch. And so we do remove and euthanize all the green crabs that we capture. And that can be, you know, hundreds and almost thousands in a year, but that's only a drop in the bucket, most likely, in terms of the number of green crabs that are actually in Coos Bay. So So we're probably doing a little bit, but it's not an attempt to eradicate green crabs.
All right, let me illuminate a little more what you're talking about there. So if it's an invasive species and you pull it out of the water, don't throw it back. You're, by law, told to not dispose of it that way.
That's correct, yes.
All right, so what do you do? I mean, where do you take it?
You can take it to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife offices. They will dispose of it for you, or you can freeze them. That seems to be the best way to euthanize green crabs. So we'll just take it back, put it in the freezer overnight, and that will do it.
All right, so they don't revive from freezing, I'm going to assume. You said euthanize, so there's no danger of them, like, you know, waking up in a landfill or something.
No, not if you make sure they're actually frozen, they will not wake up. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And so is there any sort of a control plan in place or forming now for the European green crabs, particularly in the estuary at South Slough?
No, we do not have a control plan, and there's really, it's difficult to manage green crabs. As you can imagine, they're under the water, moving around, places we can't get at. You can trap them, but again, they're going to come back in on the current, so you can't, even if you eradicated them from and got rid of them from Coos Bay, they would just come back. So we need a better management plan, and it might involve things like pheromones, using to trap them, trap the females. It could involve removing lots of crabs, or it could involve reducing catches on red rock crabs and Dungeness crabs to provide more resistance from those natural predators.
Oh, keeping the numbers of the Dungeness crab up, you're saying, would potentially help work on the green crab population?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the green crabs subject to some of the things that affect the Dungeness, like the domoic acid outbreaks that occasionally will stop the Dungeness crab fishery?
Yes, they're also susceptible to the same things. But since we don't eat them, we don't test them, so we're not sure how much are in the green crabs.
All right, so some stuff there. So Kim, help us understand how something like a green crab gets established in parts of the Oregon coast. I mean, how big or small are the crabs that move in with the currents, for example?
Oh, they're free-forming larvae. They're tiny, planktonic, free-swimming larvae, and they just hitch a ride on the current, and they can be transported to novel areas. And so it really depends on how many individuals settle. And as we know, it only takes a male and a female to create offspring. They're able to have up to 200,000 to 500,000 eggs per year per female, and that's from an average-sized female. They can mate 2 to 3 times per year and have eggs. So their numbers can grow quite quickly and disperse readily.
Wow, that's a lot of attrition, though, I would think. 200,000 to 500,000 eggs, and then I can't imagine that many survive.
Correct. As free-floating planktonic larvae, they do serve as a food source for the other creatures in the water. I would like to add, there is an Oregon invasive species hotline that people can call. It's a toll-free number. To report any invasive species sightings, I recommend taking photos and noting the date and the exact location where they see specimens, and that way the agencies can coordinate together and respond appropriately. That invasive species hotline for Oregon is 1-866-468-2337.
2337, 866-468-2337.
Yes.
And that's for all invasive species, not just the marine type?
That is all invasive species for the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I'm glad you got that. We'll put that up on our website as well. When you say planktonic, I know what that means in human relations. What does it mean for green crab larvae?
It just means they're teeny tiny, very tiny, like microscopic almost. Mm-hmm. Free-floating larvae, they're small.
So they look like specks or grains or something? I mean, not at all recognizable as a crab, for example.
Right. They're tiny. We're talking millimeters, if that big, depending on their stage of life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're definitely very small. Now, are there places, Sean Schuler, where the Dungeness crabs just aren't found anymore because the green crabs have pushed them out?
We haven't seen that yet, but the problem is that the Dungeness crab likes being way up high in the estuary. We find a lot when we do our seining some sampling methods, we find lots of little tiny Dungeness crabs way up in the upper estuary. So they have to come down through this gauntlet of green crabs to get to the lower estuary where they're at when they're adults. And so we expect that there's going to be a lot of mortality from those. A lot of them are going to die on that trek through the green crabs down to the lower estuary.
Interesting. So it's almost like you have a green crab sandwich on the estuary. You got the Dungeness high and low and the green crab in the middle.
Yep, that's right.
Yowza. So I want to be clear here too, Kim Sims, because we were talking about the appearance of the European green crab, and there are five spines on near either eye and then three bumps as well. Now, Dungeness crab even can appear green at times, so you really can't go by the color, is that right?
That is very correct. You have to rely on the spines because the green crab can look similar to a lot of other native crab species, like the kelp crab, which is also green. So you can't rely on color for identification purposes.
Sean Schuler, is there a sense that you're aware of the situation early enough that you can kind of live with the European green crab and it's not going to cause that big a problem, or is there a greater concern than I'm indicating?
Oh, well, I think we're kind of on that cusp where we need to do something soon. And we have been monitoring it, and we realize that now is the time to act. And so we really need to figure out what we're going to do along the coast as a management options. And we're not really sure what that is yet. And so there is a bit of a problem there.
Okay. But a good report that lays it all out, prepared by our guest here on The Exchange. Sean Schuler is the lead scientist at the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve. Kim Sims, a recent master's graduate from Oregon State University, has studied green crabs extensively. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you. That hotline again, the Invasive Species Hotline for ODFW, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, 866-468-2337.